a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Okay, we'll call the Senate local government to order. Welcome all of our internet listeners. Would remind everyone in the body here to please shut their phones off or put them on wiggle. At this time, I'll have the secretary call a roll.
Hager.
Here.
Heinert. Excused. Olson.
Here.
Sutton. Excused. Teason.
Here.
Polian.
Here.
Hewing.
Here. Okay. We do have a quorum. At this time, I would ask to entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting. Okay. Motion made by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Teason for approval of the minutes. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Welcome, everyone, again. And if you have any handouts, please distribute them through the pages which are present. We'll have those folks introduce themselves at this time. Just please come forward and tell us who you are and where you're from.
I'm Krista Guthrie. I'm from here.
Okay.
Anything else?
That's fine.
Tell us your favorite movie.
Probably should come up to the mic and...
Oh. The little green light is on.
We'll make you do it right.
I'm Abby Simon, and I'm from Holman, South Dakota.
And your favorite movie is...
My favorite movie is Footloose.
Wait, original or remake?
Original.
Okay, because if it was remake, you're out of here.
I'm Marcus Ireland from Alcester.
Favorite movie?
We're not going down.
12 Angry Men.
Okay. Please make sure everyone is signed in, and we'll go ahead and begin this morning. Our first bill is House Bill 1090. The title is to prohibit a person from serving as a member of a Consumers Power District Board of Directors in certain cases. And at this time, we will allow proponents for House Bill 1090. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members of local government, Representative Steve Wester, District 13, Sioux Falls. I come before you today and ask for your support of House Bill 1090. I believe House Bill 1090 is a common sense piece of legislation that protects the businesses and marketing strategies of consumer power districts here in South Dakota, but more specifically, the bill amends existing statute with language that states that no person shall be qualified to serve as a member of a Consumer Power District Board of Directors if their service would be inconsistent with that of their employment or financial interest. I'm confident that many of you have or do serve on boards presently and know that being on a board, a lot of times there's proprietary information that is shared. And as we all know, proprietary information right out of the definition is information that is not public knowledge, such as certain financial data, test results, or trade secrets. And that is viewed as the property of the holder. I want to be clear, though, that this language does not ask for a carve-out for consumer power districts or ask them to be treated any differently than their competitors. Their competitors already have similar language in their bylaws, and I believe that this language puts consumer power districts on a level playing field with their competitors and adds protection to their business practices. I think a perfect example that I could give you of what this bill essentially is if you had two companies, Coca-Cola and Pepsi, and you had a person that was working for Coca-Cola and was trying to get on the board of Pepsi, I think we would all agree that we would not want that to happen. With that being said, I know we have a registered lobbyist here with Heartland Consumer Power District that would like to explain the bill even in greater detail. But I would ask for all of your support this morning of House Bill 1090, and we'll stand by for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Further proponents? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Drew Duncan. I'm a registered lobbyist for Heartland Consumers Power District, and I'm a lawyer in Sioux Falls. Heartland Consumers Power District is a wholesale power supplier that provides power to municipalities in South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Iowa, and also provides supplemental power to the state of South Dakota at USD, SDSU, Northern, and DSU over and above those institutions' WAP allocations. Heartland is the only consumer's power district in the operating in the state of South Dakota. I'm here today, obviously, to ask you for your support of House Bill 1090. Heartland, like any other consumer's power district that could be created, is a creature of statute. By that, I mean Heartland, it was created by the statutes contained in six separate chapters of Title 49 in the South Dakota Code. Everything is covered from the formation of a power district right up to its dissolution. The qualifications to serve as a board of director are articulated in SDCL 493611. As you can see in the original language on the statute, there's absolutely no mention of director's conflict of interest, and I cannot find any mention of the topic anywhere else in Title 49. Heartland believes this needs to be changed. It's also important to note that as a quasi-governmental entity, Heartland's board of directors are elected in much the same fashion that you are, with the exception being that Heartland's board elections are considered non-political. There are 10 separate board positions that encompass 10 separate board divisions. In order to run for the board, a potential board member has to take out a petition from the Secretary of State's office and get at least 50 qualified electors of the district to sign the petition. These petitions are then certified by the Secretary of State, and the petitioner is placed on the general election ballot. The issue that is before you today is not a new one to Heartland. The Board of Heartland Consumer Power District's staff and legal counsel have been considering a statutory change for a number of years. All the groups mentioned have had concerns that due to the competitive nature of the electric business and the absence of any statutory language prohibiting service on the board by a competitor, the Heartland strategic marketing and business decisions could be accessed. This would potentially have a significant adverse effect in pricing and customer development on Heartland's business and the many customers in South Dakota and elsewhere that Heartland serves. A recent situation brought this issue to the point where Heartland felt it must ask the legislature to intervene and amend the existing statutory framework. As I explained to most of you when I talked to you in the last election cycle, a gentleman that worked for another electric company in South Dakota took out petitions to run for Heartland's board. Now, before I go any further, I have to tell the committee that neither at the time nor now did Heartland believe that the person took out the petitions to do so with any malice or with the intention of exposing marketing or customer development secrets to his employer. The board and staff at Heartland immediately realized that if the person was elected to serve to the board, that he could not have taken part in a significant amount of strategic planning, marketing, and even some legal discussions held by the board in its regular course of business. The candidate's service on the board would have been significantly hampered to the point that service at all would have been nearly worthless. Due to a petition filing error by the candidate, his petition was challenged. He was knocked off the ballot. Regardless, the board knew that situations like these had to be avoided in the future and that a statutory change needed to be requested to this body. The amendment of the existing statute itself is very simple. As Representative Wester related to you earlier, the new language prohibits service on Heartland's board for people with conflicting employment or inconsistent financial interests. Both conflicting employment and financial interest are terms well-defined in other jurisdictions and are used by our competitors within the industry currently. It is our belief that should there ever be a challenge based on this language, that a court would easily be able to decipher these terms. A body of case law exists in states such as Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, and elsewhere on what constitutes a conflict under the financial interest language, and we believe a court would have no problem seeing what is inconsistent employment. The Iowa case law states the conflict of interest generally are based on moral principles and public policy. The conflict of interest laws are meant to avoid putting public service, like those who sit on Heartland's board, to the difficult and often insoluble task of deciding between public duty and private advantage. Other jurisdictions, like Missouri, define a financial interest as an interest in another competing party or direct or indirect competitor. And whether or not the person who is asking to be seated on a board can set aside his or her interest when making decisions. Nebraska's case law defines financial interest as when one has a substantial direct benefit or personal business motivation. Some time ago, the United States government also defined it as when one has a direct or indirect interest in the pecuniary profits or contracts of a business. As you can see from the examples provided, the terms are well-defined in law and would add protection to the business performed by Heartland. In conclusion, I would ask for your support again of Senate Bill 1090, and I'd be happy to stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any further proponents? for House Bill 1090? Seeing none, do we have any opponents that would like to testify this morning? Okay, seeing none, I guess we don't need a rebuttal, unless you want to do it again.
I don't think you want to.
Okay, our testifier doesn't need any more practice, so we will close the testimony from the floor and offer it to the committee for questions.
Chairman.
Senator Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Mr. Duncan. If you know the answer, you mentioned a situation where an individual maybe would have had a conflict of interest, was kicked off the ballot. So is there any individuals that you are aware of in South Dakota who this law would affect currently who are serving?
Mr. Chairman, no, I need to explain that further. I don't think I did a very good job of it. The person wasn't kicked off the ballot for a conflict of interest issue. He was kicked off the ballot because he failed to get the signature, much the same way you would. He failed to get signatures in the correct way. So that's why he was off the ballot. But who this may affect, no, or not aware. Not aware of anybody. Remember, there's only one Consumers Power District operating in the state of South Dakota. It operates on the eastern side of the state in 10 subdivisions. There are no other Consumers Power Districts currently operating, and we're not aware of anyone on the board of directors currently that would have a pecuniary interest or inconsistent employment that this would apply to.
Follow-up?
So the answer, short answer is no.
Brief follow-up. Are you aware of any other situations of this happening in other states currently?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware that any other states have Consumers Power District Boards of Directors like ours does.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has this happened in South Dakota in the past?
With Consumers Power, Mr. Chairman, with Consumers Power Districts?
Yeah. Has anybody served on the Board of Directors or had a conflict of interest or a different issue in the history of these boards? So maybe not currently.
This board? There's only one Consumers Power District operating in the state of South Dakota, and we are not aware of that it's been a problem in the past. It would have been a problem if with the last person. We're not aware that it's been a problem in the past. Although, in fairness, I'm not aware of the 60-some-year history of it. It certainly could have been an issue 20 years ago. I'm not aware of it. It's become an issue in the last 6 to 8 years.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So perhaps this isolated issue is kind of what kind of pushed the bill forward. There are no other circumstances, but the potential of this person, not as an individual, but that this could happen in the future.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Absolutely. As I said in my testimony, this has been something that we've talked about for, at least the last 8 years, if not probably more like 6 years. It's always been something that's been on the radar because there's always been, quite frankly, about 6 years ago, I brought it up as a potential issue. It had never come to a head. We'd never decided to do anything about it legislatively. The reason we decided to do something about it legislatively now, and we probably should have 4 to 6 years ago, and it's probably my fault we didn't. The reason that we did so now is because the situation actually, it felt like our hands were forced to do something in order to protect the board information, the marketing issues, and the customer lists.
Okay. Further questions? Okay. Seeing none, we would offer it to the committee for further discussion or action.
Mr. Chair.
Second.
Okay. We have a do pass motion by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Teason for a do pass on House Bill 1090. Is there any discussion on the motion?
I think it's been very well explained to us.
Okay. Ms. Secretary, please call a roll call on those in favor will say aye. Those opposed say no.
Hager.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Holian.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye. Okay, we have a unanimous do pass. Senator Holian.
I'll move consent.
Second.
Okay, it was motioned by Senator Holian and seconded by Senator Hager to place House Bill 1090 on the consent calendar. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we will place that on the consent calendar going to the floor. The next bill we have before us this morning is House Bill 1106. The title is to establish the rights of municipal, county, or township officers in certain decision-making processes. And at this time, we will take testimony from the proponents. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senator Craig Teason, District 34, Rapid City. If you're like me, the first time you looked at 1106, the first thing you say is, say what? And it seems to be kind of gobbledygook, and you can't quite figure out exactly what it's trying to do. But then after you go through and hear the discussion of it, then your next response is, so really, we need a bill to cover this, but it appears that we do. There's a court case which will be explained to you. And really, this has to do with public officials and their ability to conduct investigations and talk to people and check out situations. I think we would all expect that county commissioners and city council members and township board members, you know, if they're working on a zoning issue or some issue, that they would go out and take a look at the situation and maybe talk to some people about how it might affect them. That seems to be the duties of an elected official. But somehow this got into some sort of legal conflict, and I'll leave it to others to explain the exact circumstances. But this appears to be hopefully this is a bill that we can support that will clarify the duties of these officers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further proponents on House Bill 1106. Good morning, Mr. Hood.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Senator Ewing, and members of the Senate Local Government Committee. My name is Jim Hood, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Municipal League. House Bill 1106, as Senator Teason explained, arises out of a decision by the Minnehaha County Commission to grant a conditional use permit for an agricultural facility. That decision was appealed to the circuit court by neighbors whose home was located across the road from the proposed site of that facility. The circuit court upheld the decision of the county commission, and the neighbors then appealed that decision to the South Dakota Supreme Court. And that decision is Hansen versus the Minnehaha County Commission. As a part of their appeal, the neighbors claimed that their due process rights were violated when a county commissioner conducted an ex parte investigation prior to the hearing by visiting a similar facility located in another community. Prior to the hearing, the commissioner disclosed that he had visited this facility and had toured it and was impressed with the safety measures that were in place there. The circuit court found that this tour constituted an ex parte communication that disqualified his vote. Now, we believe that the county commissioner should have been applauded for doing his homework to educate himself on an issue coming before the commission. House Bill 1106 states the obvious by clarifying and codifying the actions a public servant may engage in to educate themselves about matters coming before them. Section 1 says that public officials can rely on their own experience and background, subject to the applicable laws and rules concerning recusal and disqualification of a public officer. Section 2 specifies what actions are legislative in nature, and Section 3 says that if the meeting or hearing is quasi-judicial in nature, it may be conducted informally. Now, if a public officer relies upon evidence not produced at the hearing, he or she must disclose that matter. Failure to disclose may be grounds for disqualification. Now, examples of quasi-judicial hearings are the issuance or denial of a conditional use permit, zoning matters, issuance or denial of alcoholic beverage licenses. Now, quasi-judicial is a term of art, and it's defined in statute, and you can find that at SDCL 132-1, paren 10. And I can just read a little bit of that for you, that a qualified judicial function means an adjudicatory function exercised by an agency involving the exercise of judgment and discretion in making determinations in controversies. And so it goes on to say that the term includes the functions of interpreting, applying, and enforcing existing rules and laws, granting or denying privileges, rights, or benefits, and so on. So I've given you that site, and if you would like, I could provide you a copy of that definition. Section 4 of the bill reiterates that public officers may receive public input about matters of public interest, and that such does not disqualify them, and that public officers are presumed to be objective and capable of being fair and impartial. And finally, in quasi-judicial functions, as I explained to you, proceedings, clear and convincing evidence must be produced to demonstrate prejudice or unacceptable risk of bias in order to disqualify the vote of that public official. I ask for your support of House Bill 1106 and would stand by to answer questions.
Okay, thank you. Further proponents, House Bill 1106. Good morning, Mr. Wilcox.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Bob Wilcox with the County Commission Association. Mr. Hood has walked you through the bill section by section and has explained it. We're asking for your support on 1106 because, quite frankly, it gives us the opportunity and makes it clear that we can certainly educate ourselves before we have to make difficult decisions and perform our duties as county commissioners and other elected officials as you as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Further proponents? Further proponents on House Bill 1106? Seeing none, do we have any opponents? Okay. We will close the testimony from the floor and offer it to the committee for questions. Seeing no questions, we will offer it to the committee for discussion or action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Holley.
I'll move to pass.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion by Senator Holley for due pass on House Bill 1106, seconded by Senator Sutton. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay. Seeing none, Secretary, will you please call the roll? Those in favor of the motion will say aye. Those opposed, say nay.
Senator Hager.
Aye.
Heiner.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Holian.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye.
Aye.
Move consent.
Second.
Okay. We have a unanimous motion for due pass and a motion by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Holian to place the House Bill 1106 on the consent calendar. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. It will be placed on the consent. The next bill that we will have before us is House Bill 1135. Title is to expand certain bonding provisions regarding local government officials and employees. And at this time, we will take proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning again, Mr. Chair and members of Senate Local Government. Once again, my name is Jim Hood, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Municipal League. Okay, here's Senator Peters.
Here, Senator, you can sign in.
Local entities have a variety of requirements that require elected officials and employees to provide a bond before taking their oath of office. These These statutes were, in many cases, established many years ago, and the requirement does not begin to cover what a reasonable expectation of the amount of that bond should be in many cases. Now, coverage products have evolved more quickly, and often much better coverage is available to local entities than the individual bond requirements found in various sections of the code. What this bill would do, it would simply allow local entities to purchase a blanket bond, which covers the entire entity and all the officials and employees that are required to have a bond in order to perform the duties of their office. The bill provides that that coverage must be in at least the total amount of all the individual bonds that were in place prior to the passage of this act. If the blanket coverage meets these criteria, it would be allowed to take the place of all of the individual bonds, so that county officials or city officials would be required to post. And stand by for questions.
Okay. Do we have further proponents on House Bill 1135? Did you bring our sheet back?
I'm Deb Peters, State Senator, District 9. I'm a proponent of the bill. I'm the prime sponsor, but by the time you guys started pulling up proponent, I was on the stairs, so I apologize for being a little late. The previous speaker already hit all the talking points on this particular bill, and I just urge your support on this bill, because I think it's a common sense a bill to help streamline the process when it comes to local government. So I'd appreciate your support.
Okay, thank you. Further proponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Senator Ewing and members of the committee. My name is Angela Ehlers, and I represent South Dakota's Conservation District. We thank you for supporting the bill. We have a lot of, quite a few of our conservation districts.
I'm sorry. You didn't hear any of that. Okay, we'll start again. Good morning. My name is Angela Ehlers. I represent South Dakota's conservation districts, and we do support this bill. We have some conservation districts that have part-time staff. And they're in small towns, don't pay real well. We get quite a bit of turnover. By allowing us to have blanket bonds, we don't lose that in the transition from staff to staff, miss something where we didn't necessarily get the individual bonds updated. By doing a blanket bond, we guarantee that that entity continues to have coverage throughout changes in staff, changes in personnel. So that is another reason that we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, House Bill 1135. Good morning again, Mr. Wilcox.
Good morning again, Bob Wilcox with the County Commission and Association. The reason we like this particular bill, it allows us to streamline our offices, and one bond will cover all the offices that are required by statute for bonds. So with that, we ask you for your support as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Further proponents? Seeing no further proponents, we will open it up for opponents of House Bill 1135. Boy, these are tough bills this morning. Okay, seeing no opponents, we will close the testimony from the floor and offer it to the committee for questions. Seeing no questions, we'll offer for discussion or action.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Senator Holine.
I'll move to pass.
Second.
Okay, we have a do-pass motion made by Senator Holine on House Bill 1135, seconded by Senator Hager. Any discussion on the motion? Senator Sutton.
Well, we're a pretty quiet group this morning. We need to liven this up a little bit, and maybe the next bill will get us going a little bit. But this just makes sense, and I'd urge your support, and let's keep rolling. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Secretary will call a roll call vote. Those in favor of the motion will say aye. Those opposed will say nay.
Senator Hager.
Aye.
Heiner.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Holian.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye. Okay, we have a unanimous motion.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion by Senator Heiner and seconded by Senator Holine to place on the consent calendar, place House Bill 1135 on the consent. Those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. It will be placed on the consent.
Thank you, guys.
We'll call you on the next tough one. Okay. The next bill we have, the next and the last bill we have before us this morning is House Bill 1150. The title is to provide for the annual adjustment of the salary of legislators. At this time, we will take proponent testimony. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that the Senate prime on this, Senator Norvstrup, is not going to probably be able to be here today, so I think I'm going to handle the testimony. I know he has an important bill that's up or going to be up very, very soon. First of all, my name is State Representative Jim Bolin. I represent District 16, which is the furthest southeastern portion of South Dakota, that being all of Union County and the southern rural portions of Lincoln County. And I'm in my last term here in the legislature. House Bill 1150 is a bill that will treat South Dakota legislators as all other state employees. It includes state legislators with the other elected state officials listed in South Dakota Codified Law 3-8-2-1. That section lists those who will receive additional annual compensation based, and I quote, on the across-the-board increase to base salaries of state employees under the General Appropriation Act. This is a simple issue of inclusion and is supported by members of both political parties. State legislators are state employees. If state employees receive no increase, neither would legislators. State employees generally receive minimal increases in any one year. So would legislators. This adjustment, or this proposal, I should say, is not tied to any federal CPI. There are no automatic increases built in that ignore state finances. It would only be in line with what other state employees are paid. This is a very self-explanatory bill. I would urge your support. Thank you very much. And I will stand by for questions.
All right. Thank you. Further proponents, House Bill 1150. Looks like you're the lone duck here. Any opponents? House Bill 1150. Okay, we will close testimony from the floor and offer to the committee for questions or discussion or action. Senator Sutton.
Question for Representative Bolin.
Go ahead.
Morning, Mr. Bolin. Was there any discussions with BFM about this bill? And the second question would be is, what's the history? Why were members of the legislature left out? Did you look into that at all? Or what's your knowledge of that? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, let me, if I can answer the second question first, would that be appropriate? I have talked with other legislators. I've looked into it, and I'd say minimally myself as to the history of this. Back in the early 1990s, that is when, to the best of my knowledge, this there was a revision of this particular statute. At that particular time, the listing there in South Dakota Codified 3-8-2.1, that is when the individuals listed here, the governor, lieutenant governor, plus the constitutional offices, justice of the Supreme Court, each circuit court judge, that is at that time, it'd be approximately between 20 and 25 years ago that they were included in this particular statute and given an automatic increase based, again, not on any CPI, but on the rate of increase that state employees have. So that's the best I can give you. I'm quite confident that, yes, this took place, I think, in 1992 or 1993 in that particular time frame. As to my own question as to the as to BFNM, I have not. Based on my calculations, the proposal for state workers for this coming year is going to be 2%. The total, that means that a state legislator in the next legislative session would receive a $120 pay increase, and the total amount that this would impact the state budget would be for 105 legislators would be $12,600. But as to my actual discussions with BFNM, I did not consult them as to that minimal amount of money.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, thanks for the answers. Maybe BFM just didn't notice the bill was up or something. I would have thought they might be here to talk about it, but that's all right with you, I'm sure, probably.
Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Boland, how do you square this bill with Article 21, Section 2 of the state constitution?
I've looked at that. I've evaluated that. I guess my statement on that, Senator, would be that all bills are considered constitutional until proven otherwise. Okay, that's I learned that from and until someone challenges a bill that is passed by the legislature, that's basic poli-sci 101, that every bill that's passed by an elected legislature is considered constitutional until challenged and proven otherwise.
So, follow up?
Go ahead.
So based on House Bill 1150, will the General Appropriations Act each year, which will presumably include an increase in pay for the legislature, require a two-thirds vote?
I don't believe so. But I would say this is that...
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that there would be in years and in my 7 years so far in the legislature, there have been, I believe, three times that the state workers received no increase in pay. And of course, that would mean the legislature received no increase in pay as well.
One more. Well, and finally, talks about increase if there were a time when our economy would require a decrease in pay, how would this affect legislators?
The bill is written. If there is no change in the pay for state workers, as listed all the other individuals here, then that would not impact state legislators as well. Whatever other individuals are going to receive, then that would also be received by the legislature.
Follow up? You're in pretty deep thought there.
I'll save it for discussion. We apparently have a disagreement about what word increase means, but...
Do we have any questions from the other end down here? Okay. If there are no further questions, I would offer it for discussion or action. Senator Teason.
Well, I'll start out. Obviously, I have an interest in this subject. I pitched this subject, I believe, just last week on the floor. I'm fairly passionate about it. I think there's a good reason to talk about increasing legislator pay. I think it's important for future legislatures. But I also think that the time when the legislature raises its pay is the time that it's got the guts to step up and vote two-thirds majority to make it happen. South Dakota Constitution, Article 21, Section 2, says that by two-thirds vote. I cited that in my floor discussion. And I believe it applies here. I'm trying to think my way through this. I mean, Frankly, I reject the argument that
I think it's just too callous to say that everything's constitutional until proven otherwise. If the Constitution says a vote of two-thirds, then will this bill require a two-thirds vote on the floor? And if it does or doesn't, then the Appropriations Act every year, which would include our legislator pay increase, in my view, based on Article 21, Section 2 of the state constitution, would then require that the general appropriations bill required a two-thirds vote. I beg anyone to counter that logic. As I've said repeatedly, I am all for a pay increase. I think it's important to future legislators. I consider this, no offense to the proponent, but I consider this a backdoor attempt to accomplish something that the legislature is going to have to step up and do in a straightforward manner at a time when it feels that it's ready. I've long complained about Congress and the manner in which they've set up their automatic pay increases unless they vote otherwise. This is, in my view, a partner to that. And so I will not be able to support this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Further discussion or action? Senator Sutton.
Mr. Chair, I move defer 41st day.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion by Senator Sutton and seconded by Senator Heinert to move House Bill 1150 to the 41st day. Any discussion on the motion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the good senator on the other end of the table said a lot of the things that I was thinking. And I think we need to be able to take the hard vote if we want to increase our pay. And until we address some other issues in this state, I can't support it at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Heinert.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, you know, the good senator from Rapid City gave very compelling testimony the other day on his bill. And I went home and talked about it. And we had, of course, had seen this bill coming down the pike. And I had a very good conversation with a school administrator. And they said, you know what? Instead of raising your pay like this, I think you guys should get $30,000 a year, and then maybe we would get more diversity up in Pierre if we can make it so younger people can, with families, can serve and be part of the legislature. And it kind of shocked me to hear him say that. I didn't support that bill on the floor. I don't think I can support this, but I think the good senator is right. We should make that tough decision. Should be a two-thirds vote and vote it up or down. And that's why I can't support this. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none. Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor of the motion will say aye. Those opposed will say nay.
Senator Hager.
No.
Heinert.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye. Reluctantly.
Sutton.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Holian.
No.
Hewing.
Aye.
Two nays.
Okay. We have a majority that support the motion to send to the 41st day. House Bill 1150 will be sent to the 41st day. Do we have any further business to come before the committee this morning? Seeing none, we've got three bills that, as soon as I can find them here, I'll... Friday morning, we will take up House Bill 1139, House Bill 1165 and House Bill 1194. And we will meet at 7:45 a.m. If there's no further business, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Senator Hager, seconded by Senator Olson to adjourn. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.